Okay, Shalom, welcome back to part three. Let's go ahead and pick up right where we left off with slide 32. Ancient covenants were often ratified or enacted by multiple elements. These included the oath spoken by both parties, usually a sacrifice and a shared meal. Additionally, there were normally stipulations included in the covenant to recite and review the covenant annually, and or at the time of a new vassal king, in order for renewal and remembrance of the covenant made with the suzerain king. Okay, this is key. This is an understanding to why it is that they consistently, you know, recite the Torah and rededicate themselves to Yah and to the covenant every Shavuot. You know, we go back and we reread the Torah, you know, on Sukkot when we're supposed to. Now, this is a resource that we all should be familiar with just by going through the teachings about the Blood Covenant here on Wisdom and Torah. It's from the Blood Covenant by Henry Trumbull, pages 350 through 351. And it says this about, you know, the sacrifice right after a covenant is made. Trumbull says, a covenant union and sacrifice is an indefinite and ambiguous term. It may mean a covenant union wrought by sacrifice, or a covenant union accompanied by sacrifice, or a covenant union exhibited in sacrifice. But in whatever sense it is employed, the fact remains true that wherever a bloody offering is made in connection with sacrifice and with covenanting, it is the blood drinking, the blood pouring, or the blood touching that represents the covenant making. While eating the flesh of the victim or of the feast otherwise provided represents the covenant ratifying or the covenant showing. Continuing on with slide 34, it's the same quote from Trumbull's book. Thus at Sinai, the formal covenanting of the master with his people was accompanied by sacrificing. Representatives of the people of Israel offered burnt offerings, sacrificed peace offerings of oxen unto the master, unto Yah. Nothing is here said of the technical sin offering, but the whole burnt offering and the peace offering are included. The blood outpouring and the blood sprinkling preceded any feasting, and as if to make it clear that by sprinkling the blood and not by eating the flesh of the victim, the covenant union in this sacrifice was represented. Moshe took a portion of the blood and sprinkled it on the altar, and another portion and sprinkled it on the people, saying as he did so, "Behold, the blood of the covenant which Yah has made with you." It was not until after this covenanting by blood that the people of Israel, by their representatives, did eat and drink in ratification, which means that they confirmed it, or in proof, or an exhibit of the covenant thus wrought by blood. Okay, so here we see that everything we're reading about as far as ratifying covenants in the scriptures was known all throughout the ancient Near East. This is how everybody pretty much ratified their covenants. Let's go back, like I said, and we'll take a look at Exodus 24, 1 through 12, and read all of this, you know, as a whole now that we've talked about the slaughtering of the offerings and the sprinkling of the blood to confirm and to ratify the covenant. Exodus 24, 1. And to Moshe he said, "Come up to Yah, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and the 70 of the elders of Israel. And you shall bow yourselves from a distance. But Moshe shall draw near to Yah by himself, and let them not draw near, nor let the people go up with him." And Moshe came and related to the people all the words of Yah and all the right rulings. Here we go. And all the people answered with one voice and said, "All the words which Yah has spoken we shall do." And Moshe wrote down all the words of Yah and rose up early in the morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain and 12 standing columns for the 12 tribes of Israel. Now, you guys also know, or should know by now, is that raising columns is also a sign of a covenant. It's an ancient Near Eastern covenant ritual. Verse 5. And he sent young men of the children of Israel, and they offered burnt offerings and slaughtered peace offerings and bulls to Yah. And Moshe took half of the blood and put it into the basins, and half the blood he sprinkled on the altar. And he took the book of the covenant and read in the hearing of the people, and they said, here we go again, All that Yah has spoken, we shall do and obey. So there's our, that's our second and third reference to Israel saying, yes, we will keep the commandments. Now, we all know what happened later on. Verse 8, Moshe took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, see, the blood of the covenant which Yah has made with you concerning all these words. And Moshe went up, also Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and the 70 of the elders of Israel, and they saw the Elohim of Israel, and under his feet like a paved work of sapphire stone, and like the heavens for brightness. Yet he did not stretch out his hand against the chiefs of the children of Israel. And they saw Elohim, and they ate and drank. They're having their meal, they're having a ratification meal. You know, all the elders of Israel, because they've said, yes, we will keep the commandments, we will do and we will obey. And Yah said to Moshe, come up to me on the mountain, and be here while I give you the tablets of stone, and the Torah, and the command which I have written to teach them. Now, this is exactly what Rav Shaul was discussing in chapter 9 of the book of Hebrews. Now, we can connect this with the ratification ceremony at Sinai with Yeshua, Redeemer and the Mediator of the renewed covenant. Remember, this is, we're not in a new covenant. Everybody should have this understanding that this is not a new covenant. We've been renewed. It is a renewed covenant because the northern 10 tribes were scattered. We broke the covenant. We needed the covenant to be renewed. This was part of the plan all along. Okay? We know this. So let's take a look at Hebrews 9. Now this is, we're going to read this entire chapter because it is, oh, it is so key to understanding. So I hope you guys are bearing with me with reading all these scriptures, and I hope this isn't too long for the first teaching I'm doing, but bear with me. We're learning. We're growing as we go through this. So now the first covenant indeed had regulations of worship in the earthly Kodesh place, for a tent was prepared, the first parts, in which was the lampstand, and the table and the showbread, which is called the Kodesh place. And after the second veil, the part of the tent which is called the Most Kodesh, the Kodesh Kodeshim, to which belonged the golden censer, the Ark of the Covenant, overlaid on all sides with gold, in which their golden pot that held the manna and the rod of Aaron, and the rod of Aaron that budded, and the tablets of the covenant. So all the elements of the covenant. And above it, the cherubim of esteem were overshadowing the place of atonement, about which we do not know, and which we do not now speak in detail. And these, having been prepared like this, the Kohanim always went into the first part of the tent, accomplishing the services. But in the second part, the Kohen HaGadol went alone once a year, not without blood, which he offered for himself and for sins of ignorance of the people. The Ruach HaKodesh signifying this, that the way into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, the Most Kodesh place, was not yet made manifest while the first tent has a standing, which was, now here we go, in highlighted in yellow, a parable for the present time in which both gifts and slaughters are offered, which are unable to perfect the one serving, as to his conscience, only as to foods and drinks and different washings and fleshly regulations imposed at a time of setting matters straight. Oh, goodness, this is totally awesome. Continuing with verse 11. But Mashiach, having become the Kohen HaGadol, the high priest of the coming good matters, through the greater and the more perfect tent, not made with hands, that is, not of this creation, entered into the Most Kodesh place, Kodesh HaKodeshim, once for all, not with the blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood, having obtained everlasting redemption. Okay, this is how Yah is able to keep his oath. He doesn't change. He doesn't break his word. He is faithful. We can trust everything that he says. Okay, even though we deserve all of the cursings, all of the separation and, you know, an eternal punishment away from him for breaking the covenant. You know, he's still upholding his oath to Abraham, which is a blessing unto Abraham's seed, which is us. Okay, so this is how we're able to be restored back to the kingdom, by Yeshua paying the price for willful, rebellious, intentional sins. Okay, verse 13. For if the blood of bulls and goats and the ashes of a heifer sprinkling the defiled sets apart for the cleansing of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of the Mashiach, who through the everlasting Spirit offered himself unblemished to Elohim, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living Elohim? And because of this, he is the mediator of a renewed covenant. The covenant has been renewed, so that death, having taken place for redemption of the transgressions under the first covenant, will form rebellious sin. Remember, those who are called might receive the promise of the everlasting inheritance. For where a covenant is, it is necessary for the death of the covenanted one to be established. For a covenant over those dead is firm, since it is never valid while the covenanted one is living. Now, I have some scriptures in parentheses there. And why that is because these scriptures, along with, you know, verses 15, 16, and 17 of Hebrews 9, is all pertaining to the marriage covenant and how we as the bride are able to be restored to our bridegroom, to the king, you know, back into the marriage covenant. Like I told you early on, every one of these covenants is intertwined. So if you go back and visit these scriptures, you'll be able to have an understanding of how it is that Israel is able to be remarried, you know, by our king. Maybe later on we'll be able to elaborate more on this as time goes on, but it's totally amazing. So go back and do a study on that. I highly recommend it. Verse 18. Therefore, not even the first covenant was instituted with blood. For when, according to Torah, every command had been spoken by Moshe to all the people, he took the blood of calves and goats with water and scarlet wool and hyssop and sprinkled both the book itself and all the people, saying, "This is the blood of the covenant which Elohim commanded you." And in the same way, he sprinkled with blood both the tent and all the vessels of the service. And according to the Torah, almost all is cleansed with blood. And without shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness. Okay, this is also a key principle we all should know already. We all should have a grasp on it, that, you know, there's no forgiveness without the shedding of blood. This is why Mashiach's blood, which is the right arm of Yah, of Adonai Tzefaot, you know, this is how we are able to be restored, by him shedding his blood for our sin, for our willful rebellious sin. Verse 23, it was necessary then that the copies of the heavenly ones should be cleansed with these, but the heavenly ones themselves with better slaughter offerings than these. For Mashiach has not entered into a Kodesh place made by hand figures of the true, but into the heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of Elohim on our behalf. Now that he should offer himself often, or not that he should offer himself often, as the high priest, the Kohen HaGadol, enters into the Kodesh place year by year with blood, not his own. For if so, he would have had to suffer often since the foundation of the world. But now he has appeared once for all at the end of the ages to put away sin by the offerings of himself. And as it awaits men to die once, and after this is the judgment, so also the Mashiach, having been offered once to bear the sins of the many, shall appear a second time, apart from sin, to those waiting for him unto deliverance, as we are waiting for Mashiach to return, to bring us back into kingdom. So Hebrews 9 is dealing with the restoration of the Shavuot marriage covenant through Mashiach's sacrifice for the willful intentional sins of an adulterous, idolatrous wife, Israel. Okay. Now to find out more about how this all ties in with being a idolatrous and adulterous wife, and understanding how Israel is divorced, you got to go back and revisit the scriptures that I have highlighted on this slide. Numbers 5, Deuteronomy 24, Jeremiah 3, the whole book of Hosea, Romans 7. Oh, you guys got to do the research on this stuff. And also Hebrews 9 is also showing us the shadow and type and meaning of Yom Kippur and the authority of Yeshua as heavenly high priest bringing atonement according to the perpetual priesthood of Melchizedek. This goes back to Hebrews 6, 13 through 20, Hebrews 7, 8. These are the parts of Hebrews I told you that I really wanted to add in here. But there's scriptures that you guys can all go back and revisit on your own. So, okay, we're almost through. We got about 10 more slides to go. And I pray that you guys are following along and you're understanding this and you're beginning to have even a more zealousness for Yah and for His Torah and for His Mashiach. Now, slide 43. These same factors that we've been talking about as far as ratification, seen in the ancient Near Eastern structure. These are the identical fundamental essentials attached to Israel's annual observance of not only Shavuot, but ultimately these same essentials. They're affixed to the feast of Hamatzot, Pesach, unleavened bread, and Sukkot. So what I'm proposing to you is that all three of these pilgrimage feasts, these are all part of the ratification. They're all ratification ceremonies of specific elements pertaining to the covenant at Sinai. It's totally amazing. This is what I'm saying is that there's not a subject we cannot talk about that does not revert back to understanding how covenant is, how covenant structure is, the language, everything attached to it. So let's take a look at Exodus 23 just so we can show you this. Three times in a year you are to observe a festival to me, Yah says. Okay. Guard the festival of unleavened bread. 7 days you eat unleavened bread, as I commanded you, at the time appointed in the month of Abib. For in it you came out of Mitzrayim, and do not appear before me empty-handed. So there's the first feast. Here's the second one. And the festival of the harvest, the first fruits of your labors. This is Shavuot, which you have sown in the field. And the third one, the festival of the ingathering. This is Sukkot at the outgoing of the year, when you have gathered in the fruit of your labors from the field. Three times in the year, all your males are to appear before me. All three of these pilgrimage feasts, I believe, are annual ratification remembrances, of different facets within the covenant, like I just said. Okay, now let's talk a little bit more briefly on the marriage covenant. I mean, as we couldn't go through all those other scriptures, which I really hopefully would be able to do, but go back and investigate this stuff. I mean, this PowerPoint's up there for you guys to have. And share it with anybody you want. Download it, print it. Go back and verify everything that I say. Just like we said earlier. Just like we hear, Rico and anybody else says, don't believe anything that I'm telling you. Go back and look it up and verify it with scripture. So as we have shown, we've shown that Shavuot is also a portrait of an intimate, loving relationship between Yah Tzafaot, Adonai Tzafaot, and Yisrael. Israel marrying her king, coming under the hoopah of Mount Sinai, accepting the ketubah, wedding contract, which is the Torah, presented by the bridegroom, the creator of the universe. Even though Yah would know that we would violate this marriage covenant, and that we would commit adultery and idolatry by going after other false mighty ones, He still instilled provisions for the restoration of His bride through Yeshua the Mashiach. I mean, I'm so in awe, and I'm totally amazed of how we can even partake in anything from our Creator. One other connection I'd like to share with you, and hopefully everybody else will see this connection also, is that this, after Shavuot in Acts 2 that we read about, we can see that a new realm of the marriage covenant has been brought to life and reality when the Ruach, the spirit of the Torah, the Ruach HaKodesh, was given and recognized as the interwoven connection to the letter of the Torah that was given at Sinai. The Ruach is our seal. Okay, this is all covenant language. You can verify this all throughout what Shaul is saying. This makes reference in the book of Ephesians and elsewhere, talking about the Ruach as our seal from the King, that we have been marked for redemption to enter into His kingdom, into Yah's kingdom, by the work of Yeshua. Oh, I mentioned also, as you can see in Ephesians chapter 1 and Acts 2. Okay, I'm making the connection with the seal. Did our King give us, Israel, His vassal nation, His servants, a signet ring or a wedding ring? Okay, or a sign to the nations that we, as His bride, are married to the great King, in which accompanies the seal of the Ruach. Okay, you guys should know that ancient covenant language, you know, whenever a vassal or a servant found favor in his king's eyes, as he was granted, you know, certain gifts and certain signs that he belonged to that king and that servant belonged to him, and you know, and one of them was a signet ring. We see this all throughout the book of Ruth, and I think Ryan's actually going to be talking about that. So what is that wedding ring? Well, it is all of the Sabbaths of Yah. And we see this in Exodus 31:13. And you speak to the children of Israel, saying, "My Shabbats you are to guard by all means, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, to know that I, Yah, Adonai, am setting you apart. You shall guard the Shabbat, for it is Kodesh to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. For anyone who does work on it, that being shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days work is done, and on the seventh is a Shabbat of rest, Kodesh to Yah. Everyone doing work on the Shabbat day shall certainly be put to death. And the children of Israel shall guard the Shabbat to observe the Shabbat throughout their generations as an everlasting covenant between me and the children of Israel. It is a sign forever. For in 6 days Yah made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day He rested and was refreshed. And when he had ended speaking with him on Mount Sinai, He gave Moshe two tablets of the witness, tablets of stone, written with the finger of Elohim." Exodus 31:13 was pointed out again. You speak to the children of Israel, saying, "My Sabbaths you are to guard by all means, for it is a sign between me and you." There it is. "Throughout your generations, to know that I, Yah, am setting you apart. I am Yah Eloheinu. Walk in my laws and guard my right rulings and do them, and set apart my Shabbats, and they shall be a sign between me and you, to know that I am Yah your Elohim." So here we have seen that the sign that accompanies the seal, that we belong to the King of the universe and are walking in covenant with Him. So we have the seal of the Ruach, and we have the sign of the Shabbat. And that's what distinguishes us from all of the nations. Now, if you remember, early on in the PowerPoint, when we were going through all of the Hebrew terms pertaining to establishing how Shavuot comes to be called the Feast of Oaths, I made mention that we were going to be talking about this sentence that's in the parentheses. It's something that I found is really, really cool, and it speaks of how awesome Yah is, you know, and how awesome the Hebrew language is. You know, I don't speak a lot of Hebrew. I'm like everybody else. I'm trying to learn and trying to grow. I pray that eventually that I will be able to speak Hebrew better than I speak English. So, we'll see. But anyway, Now, if you look at this highlighted sentence I have in the parentheses, where for the Strong's definition for Shabbat, okay, or it's a word used for swear, and also it says, as if by repeating a declaration seven times to take an oath. So, whenever somebody would use this word pertaining to swearing an oath, it has the emphasis of saying it seven times. Okay, now here, let's see the beautification of all this. I did an Esau word search for the word Shabbat a few weeks ago, prior to even knowing I was going to be doing this teaching. And it kind of just fell into place here. So, it's pretty amazing. So when I did the word search for the Hebrew word Shabbat, pertaining to Shavuot's etymology, I discovered that it came up 175 times in the Hebrew Old Testament Strong's module for Esau, and then 187 times in the King James Strong's module. Now, what is striking about this is that its usage primarily refers back to the verses dealing directly with the royal grant treaty language oath made by Yah to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Well, concerning Abraham's seed and descendants. Now, you got to remember, go back to Rico's introduction on ancient Near Eastern covenant structure and to what a royal grant treaty is. And that's basically, it's a perpetual covenant made, you know, by Yah to Abraham's seed and descendants to make them as numerous as the stars and to bless his seed and to restore, you know, Abraham's covenant that he has made with Yah. Okay, so it also, this word in turn and beautifully designed, it is directly linked also to the verses concerning the royal land grant treaty language, which is the oath made by Yah in promising the land to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov's descendants, the nation of Israel. The word Shabbat is found the most, listen to this, in the book of Deuteronomy, which is, you know, the book that's designed as a typical ancient Near Eastern covenant document. It's found in there 33 times, which is the most, you know, than any other book that we find the word. So, from our Strong's definition of the Hebrew word Shabbat, let's look at it again. See, the big yellow arrow is pointing to it. As if by repeating a declaration seven times, by an oath with an oath. When Yah swears an oath, it is as if he has sworn that oath seven times. So we can see that everything that Abba says, everything that our king, Malkinu, says, he's faithful to his word sevenfold. Okay? So every time that he makes an oath, it's as if he declares it seven times. So we can trust fully in everything that Abba has said and how he has restored us, and he's going to bring us into his kingdom. Okay, now, this is the most intrinsic element connecting this, all of these Hebrew words we've talked about, you know, to our covenant with Yah and the Feast of Shavuot and the marriage ceremony. Okay, we've already talked about the seal and the wedding ring and declaring the oath seven times, you know, by Yah. Now, the root of the main word we've been discussing in this teaching, Shabbat, it can ultimately be traced back to the word for Shabbat, meaning seven, which points directly to what? To Shabbat. So the signet or wedding ring from our king declaring we are his at the time of our marriage ceremony on Shavuot. So how amazing is that? You know. Oh, wow. I really hope you guys are with me on this and you know, understanding the connections that we have with Shavuot now and understanding ancient Near Eastern covenant language, and I pray that I've presented this well for you, and you know, we're going to learn to grow as this goes along, and hopefully the quality of the audio turns out well, and it definitely will be better next time. So I pray that you guys are all having a good Shavuot. And if you have any questions or comments, please let me know what you think. If you come across I've said something wrong, come back and let me know. I'm more than happy to change something if it doesn't line up with Scripture or we can't directly link it to what we're trying to do here. So Abba bless you and keep you, and I look forward to spending more time with you here, and I will talk to you soon. Shalom. Bye-bye.